Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 8. NORAD is an old facility, but after the secret remodeling conducted by the previous president, it was finer than it had ever been. The lighting was more natural, and the computers were among the most powerful. The living quarters had been repainted in softer colors of flat paint to make it feel less like a vault. The doors had not been opened in years, but there were man exits that were installed at the end of secret tunnels that became easier to make with modern equipment. The population of the facility had swelled in recent years as a remnant of the last administration sought to survive the normal turnover of political appointees. No one predicted that President Riker would dissolve the federal agencies, dismantling the entire wealth machine built by the Democrats over the last 86 years. Their American budget had been slashed, but there were other sources of capital that could be used to run the facility. After all, Washington had no clue what the NORAD facility was being used for. General Westmoreland had originally planned for a reverse military coup in America, using federal forces to disarm Americans. But his tactical mind allowed him to adapt to the unexpected reaction of citizens who decided to buy even more weapons. In less than 8 years, the number of weapons in America increased by 20%, an unbelievable rearming of the people in a contagious panic to protect themselves from the government itself. It was of no concern to General Morley, if it made the people angry enough to point a gun at one of their own soldiers or even a policeman, then it fit his plans perfectly. The nightmares that come after pointing a gun at someone would keep them from rising any further in goodness. They would accuse themselves, making forgiveness impossible for them. He paused for a moment as he stopped buttoning his dress blue jacket and looked in the mirror. He felt perfect. He had survived his single mother, who expressed her hatred for him every day of her life. If she could see him now, perhaps she would take it all back. "No," he said to the mirror. He pushed out his chin a little to the mirror to slide his light blue collar down his neck. He noticed a little looseness above his Adam's apple and decided to pat it with the back of his hand. Age, I suppose. Maybe we'll hit the gym tonight. What do you say?" he said to the mirror. His mother had died alone in a government hospital. She languished for nearly 2 years after her stroke. He visited her twice. She was bedridden, without the use of her right arm or her right leg, and her right eye and cheek sagged noticeably. She was not in pain, really, but the fact that she had been robbed of her speech was the memory he cherished most. That voice could etch glass in a sawmill, and he was finally free of it. She was trapped in a body that could not scream at him, and she could never raise a hand or grip a belt again. General Morley smiled in the mirror. "Perfect," he said crisply as he faced left and walked out of his apartment, deep beneath Cheyenne Mountain, and headed toward the command center of NORAD, where Semyaza was waiting. He was always waiting. He never slept. "Good morning, my master," said General Morley as he descended the steel steps from the main floor to the command center floor in the dark bowels of the NORAD complex. The room was softly lit, but the many large displays made the room seem like an arcade of sorts. Satellite and stationary camera feeds were almost floor to ceiling, with the ability to move the feeds to different screens for rapid planning and deployment of assets. Every city was watched, and most of the small towns as well. Every highway, airport, and shipping port could be zoomed in to read a book from 240 miles up in space. Nearly every phone conversation, text message, and email could be accessed real time. predictive models could be deployed in seconds based upon political and economic activities of any individual or organization. Every hotel booking, car rental, website access, and in some cases the keystrokes they made for their entire lives could be profiled and analyzed to determine the exact amount of stress that could be applied to manipulate that person or kill them. It was almost like being God. Almost. Some people were conscious that they were conscious. Some people had a whole other person inside of them that they never expressed before. It seemed they could be friends with it, talk to it, but they never let it out to play. There was no purchase history, no love affair, no writings, and sometimes no indication at all that it was there. But it was there. And sometimes, rarely, when he would apply that calculated amount of stress to their lives, they would not make the turn that was expected. They would do something completely out of character, something amazing and fascinating. And sometimes, from that point forward, the inner person and the person he had been reading about changed places. He could tempt them with what he thought was their deepest desire, and they would turn away, and he would never see them again. It was something to behold.
"I was getting concerned for you," said Semyaza, lying.
"The universe changed," said Wes, without making excuses. "The future is like drawing plans for a tower. It cannot be done without considering the cost," said Semyaza, quoting scripture. He knew them so well, partly because the Nephilim had posed as angels of light for millennia before men who sought contact with the Creator. "We're not building a tower. We're tearing it down," said Wes, with more force than usual in his voice.
"Indeed, my general. My master was pleased to receive so many souls in the realms of darkness over the past few weeks, especially after the events at Medina and Mecca, and of course the Vatican. Everyone wants to go to heaven, don't they?" asked Semyaza, knowing the answer.
"Not everyone," said Wes.
"We do all have the good music, don't we?" said Semyaza, playing with him. In all the years he had been trapped in this form on this earth, he had never met a human like General Westmorley. He was a gamer of extraordinary talent, but his ability to hate so purely and so calmly reminded him of only one other being in the universe. He wondered if his mother had been the reason he became the Dark Prince.
"Fathers do disappoint, don't they?" asked Semyaza, jumping ahead of the general's thoughts to show he was paying attention.
"Did you know about the plasma?" asked West, moving the subject back to the puzzle at hand.
"I have seen many worlds come apart," said Semyaza.
"So you knew about the plasma," said West flatly, accusing him of withholding information.
"It is unpredictable. You would only have crashed your little hard drive trying to think about it," said Semyaza.
"It is of no matter. I can find a way around it," said Wes, falling out of parade rest and walking toward the control console.
"It is a great matter," boomed Semyaza. His deep voice roared from his 12-foot body and echoed off the command center walls and ceiling. "Your weak and broken human, Boris, made an unexpected turn, and millions of people died. But without his hatred in the explosions, we lost souls in the vapors of those cities, and we are yet losing hundreds of millions more as they throw down the robes of servitude I have taken centuries to weave," said Semyaza, barely lowering his voice.
"The results were the same. Islam fell apart. Your phony deity could not, after all, protect the two holiest cities on earth. People who had been trapped in a religion that could only save them by killing them in battle broke free. They are lost and will wander like feathers in the desert wind," said Wes, playing his dark pieces in a game for the soul of mankind. "The results are not the same, General," said Semyaza, speaking formally to him. His tone was accounting now, not persuading. "I have plans for an even bigger return on our investment. Confusion and chaos are the perfect backdrops for despair and resentment. Their intentions mean nothing," said Wes. "Intention means everything," boomed Semyaza. "A rape is the same act as sex with consent, with a difference. Manslaughter is the same as murder, with intention, with a difference. Mass murder is something quite different than an act of God, my good general," said Semyaza with a deadly edge to his voice. "The pain and confusion of loss turns into a rallying banner for patriots. That is the difference. If Muslims could blame Boris or a bomb for the loss of their holy shrines, they would have a person or a state to hate. They would become stronger in the end. Yes, you would get your silly war, and people would keep fighting forever and hating forever. Just look at the hatred they have for the Jews. No one knows where it started or even how it makes sense, but they come out of the womb hating one another. The beauty of this situation is that if they can blame God for their loss, a random chance, they remain confused and in pain forever with no man to hate. They hate someone's God," said Wes, pointing his finger at Semyaza like he was scolding a child. "Is that all?" said Semyaza, knowing that West was right. "Not yet," said West, backing down his tone and regaining his demeanor. "There is yet a way to victory." "You do not know of what you speak," said Semyaza, leaning his head back as though a rubber band was about to snap in front of him. "I'm not saying we can watch an empty planet float away into space, but we can claim what is rightfully ours," said Wes. "I have heard those words before," said Semyaza. "Not from me," snapped Wes. "No, not from you, from others," said Semyaza quietly, still waiting for the band to break. "We need an invasion force. I need new technology, and I need it fast," said Wes. "You cannot land on that world," said Semyaza. "What?" asked Wes with a confused look on his face. "The energy would destroy your soldiers and make your ships stop working," said Semyaza. "How can that be?" asked Wes. "Without giving you a full lesson in physics, there are 5 forces in the universe. Consciousness is the source of all the others. That's all you need to know, for now," said Semyaza. "You're saying that the laws of physics don't apply on that planet?" said Wes. "In this world, we use electrons for everything. It is low technology made for this dimension. It's only a small part of the atomic structure. At higher frequencies, electrons don't exist in the same form, and different laws apply," said Semyaza, trying not to overwhelm the general. "Then show me a weapon that will work on that world. Show me a weapon that will kill a soul," said Wes with grit in his voice. "There is no such weapon in this universe. Only a soul can destroy itself. What you seek does not exist. Why do you think we are so careful about how humans die? They must choose to destroy themselves. Drugs, smoking, and suicide. It's all the same self-hatred. Most people are cowards, choosing instead to taunt death, but secretly knowing they are killing themselves. We invented addiction, don't forget," said Semyaza. "There has to be a way we can attack after the planets come apart," said Wes, slamming his fist into his other palm. "There may be a way to attack them, and win some ground. Perhaps you can ignite a flame of revenge in them. Maybe you can harvest a few more souls, here and there, said Semyaza, like he was telling a story to a child. His voice was distant and hopeless. He couched his mind, although Wes could not read his expressions. Then show me that way. You may have seen revenge before, but not mine. Despair and woe will be heard in every street. They will fear to hear the wind, said Wes with iron in his tone. Semyaza knew this person was buried deep beneath the scars layered on his heart. It takes time for a true killer to get made. He recalled decades of drunken fits General Grant used to throw before Lincoln reluctantly approved of his scorched earth march through the southern states. It was a very good day for Semyaza when the Union Army marched into Atlanta and burned it to the ground, with people still in it. I am concerned, General, that your judgment may not be clear to take command, said Semyaza softly, gently pulling the fly across the water in front of him. You think clarity is clouded by confidence? Perhaps, said West, circling, knowing it was a lure, and yet quivering with the urge to strike. But experience has brought me here to this point to make this shot. And my master, this is my shot. His voice was sharp, and the syllables were defined like the gears of a machine. Semyaza could feel the child, Wes Morley, cowering on the kitchen floor against the cabinets as his mother beat him with a belt and screamed condemnations at him. He could feel the burning tears and the rage in his heart straining to escape and strike back. He could feel the purity of the fear that kept him from standing up against his mother, and the night sweats soaking his pillow as he dreamed of beating her to death with that belt. I can see you have practiced enough, General. Perhaps it is time for you to take your shot at the buzzer, said Semyaza, turning around slowly to look at the displays on the wall of the NORAD command center. Maybe the life of Wes Morley was strong enough to alter the past. No one observed the past quite like the general, after all. I will bomb their cities from orbit if I have to. I don't need weapons of mass destruction. I want them to be loud and dirty. Within a few days, they will beg to be free of their incompetent leadership. Then we can send in rescue efforts to bring them out from their shelters. And then we will burn them to ash, said Wes. Our yield from victims of genocide is poor, you know, said Semyaza. There is more to it than that, said Wes, cleaning the expression from his face. I'm listening, said Semyaza, folding his furry arms in front of him. The higher planet will still be a baby, but without live humans on the surface, the process can't be completed. There is no point sending an empty ship across the universe now, is there, said Wes. The plan will be frustrated, said Semyaza. Isn't that the point? To deny the Creator his satisfaction? To cut the blooms off his garden? Asked Wes. You plan on killing everyone? Asked Semyaza. Absolutely not. Who would project misery and a helpless lust for revenge into the universe if I did that? Asked Wes. Semyaza unfolded his arms and rubbed his massive six-fingered hands together as though he was getting ready for a fine meal. Leave enough to bury the bodies, said Semyaza. When do I get the technology? Asked Wes. You'll have to wait until the seas divide, said Semyaza. You and your rules, said Wes, showing he was upset. At the risk of sounding self-serving, we cannot let advanced technology fall into the wrong hands, said Semyaza. You mean ships? Asked Wes. Armadas, said Semyaza. Capable of going between planets?
Not deep space, but they can work well for a few solar distances. Humans cannot survive being away from the planet Earth for very long, said Semyaza.
Where did the ships come from? Asked Wes.
The ocean floor, said Semyaza.
I mean before that, said Wes.
Other worlds are not of your concern, said Semyaza.
What forces do I have at my command? Asked Wes.
We cannot fight this war for you, said Semyaza.
How do I train pilots? Asked Wes.
We will train them. When they're ready, you may conduct your campaign, said Semyaza.
I will communicate my orders when my plan is ready.
Thank you, said Wes, facing right and heading for the stairs.
Semyaza watched as the general topped the stairs and disappeared into the hallways of the NORAD facility. He turned to face the display screens again and put his long furry arms behind him, folding his fingers together and closing his eyes. He took a long breath and slowly exhaled. It had been more than 10,000 years since these giant warships had ruptured the crust of planet Earth and plunged whole continents to the bottom of the sea. The escalation of weaponry between armies nearly always sends a planet's civilization back to living in caves. This time, there would be no balancing. This time, he would send an empty planet back down the cosmic river. The Creator will receive his precious Earth without so much as 8 souls left alive, he whispered quietly. There, it was said. Now let it be so, he hissed to the deaf screens in front of him.